Hey everyone, I'd like to introduce a very special podcast, and up front I'll just mention my Odyssey channel. Go to odyssey.com, odyse.com, and search for Ivor Cummins. You'll get my channel, and that's where I have a lot of the more controversial analysis and viral related material. But I'll go ahead now with what we have here in this podcast. It's myself and Mark Felstead, and we did a super conference online with some of the best professors, doctors of medicine out there who understand root cause of heart disease and modern chronic disease. And they gave incredible talks, and we had very active, engaged Q&As where everyone got to answer their questions. And it was incredible material, and we're really delighted with it. But I'm glad to say we now have all of the talks from our specialists and experts and the Q&A sessions and bonus material all available. 39 books download. And the link is shown in the description box below. And it's basically weloveourheart.com/register. So 39 books, you get the whole day and a half worth of the top experts with the really hardcore science and the advice on how to fix your health, your mental acuity, your productivity, and your life generally to make it more pleasurable, enjoyable, and a longer life. So fantastic resource there. And if you wish, you can take advantage. But this podcast, I talk to Mark Felstead, and I also show a whole bunch of clips from all of our speakers, you know, kind of highlights, if you will, from their talks and the Q&As. So regardless of whether you want to take advantage of the offer, please do enjoy for free this discussion with all of those clips. The best of the best, if I say so myself. So enjoy. Hey, all of you health-focused people out there. Today is a very special podcast, number 140. And myself and Mark Felstead of We Love Our Heart are going to go through our recent virtual conference, which got a great attendance, and it was an absolutely stunning day, if I say so myself. But the key thing in this conversation is we're going to show clips from all of the top-notch speakers and some clips from the Q&A sessions where we had attendees active Q&A with the speakers. So professors, doctors, and the top guys in heart disease and indeed chronic disease prevention. So we're going to show a whole load of clips from the various parts of the conference content, and it's going to be really great stuff. So watch out for that. But just up front, Mark, great to see you again.
Hi, I've always a pleasure. How are you doing, man?
Oh, great. Not a bother. Busy. But at least the conference stuff is all done, achieved. And
yeah, that was, shall we say, probably more work than we imagined to begin with. But hey, the results are there to see.
Exactly. And it was, I went out, as I know you did too, on a high that evening. I mean, I was just buzzing with how it went. So great stuff. But you know, we might start with just introducing a clip of Dr. Ralph, who actually saved your life, found you when you were essentially dead. And just a clip from that interview, but maybe, or maybe give a few words in advance of your experience.
Oh gosh, yeah, that was back in August 2018, where I thought I was doing everything right. You know, I'm fit, triathlete, runner, eating what I thought was a healthy diet. Yes, enjoyed a drink every now and again, but you know, nothing too extreme. And then one hot August evening, I rocked up for a competition. I was very excited. It was a very cool competition, running, cycling. A competition that I never finished because I collapsed 300 meters from the finish. Ralph had finished. You'll hear a little bit about that. He rushed back with another doctor. Luckily enough, there were two doctors taking part that night. There's about 100 guys taking part, guys and girls. He rushed back and started the whole CPR. You'll probably hear about that, and basically saved my life, him and Dr. Philip Lefebvre. And this clip that you're about to see was the first, he became then my cardiologist. I do mention it's a weird way to attract new patients is to randomly save their life in a sport event. But he became one of my cardiologists as well. And the clip that you're about to see, it was kind of special because it was actually the first time, although I've known him quite well for the last 3 years, it was the first time I actually spoke to him about that night. And that was quite tough for me, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. I was transfixed to the clip for sure. So, okay, let's roll it now.
It's really special for me to sit here next to Ralph, because without Ralph, And Philippe Lefebvre, let's not forget, but without Ralph, I would not be here at all. We're going to go into that in a minute. Ralph is my personal lifesaver. The big one, because let's go back now to August 18th. I just want to talk to you, and I've not touched on this before, so I don't know how I'm going to deal with it.
Okay. I finished the training or the competition. I was a third. And then after the two guys of the Bundesliga. And then I had a little...
Calm down.
Drinks and calming down, and so a few minutes. I don't know how many minutes.
I was going to say, don't rub it in that you were well ahead of me.
But shortly after my finishing, a guy came and that he shouted, "Well, somebody's lying there. He does not move." And I said, "Wow, did you call the 112?" "No, do it immediately." And I went with my bike. 300 meters about the finishing line.
Yeah.
Another colleague of mine, a neurologist, Philip, just had started to begin the resuscitation.
All right.
And we did it together then.
Yeah.
And you had no pulse, no heart action. You had a complete collapse. You were pale. You had no circulation. And it was clear what is to do.
Well, there you go. Seems like an excellent man. I've never met him, but obviously a really caring, really professional guy. And
Ivy, you would really like him because he's very much aligned to what we talk about all the time, to what we talk about with the pioneers and everybody. He's very much aligned to that. He was the first person to talk to about leaky gut. He was the first person to talk to me about heavy metals. He was the first person to talk to me about anti-inflammation and inflammation being the big problem. And we've gone quite far down the line together, also with chelation and a few other treatments that we've tried. So he's really aligned. It's really cool to have him around. Yeah.
Spot on. And in general, Germany has not been too bad for supporting nutraceuticals and things like that compared to some other countries that became kind of pharma governed countries, I sometimes say. So excellent. So I actually typed out here a list because we have so many great clips. And Professor Noakes, I've grabbed a 1 minute and a bit clip here, and he went through fascinating long lecture and fantastic Q&A, and it was all around carb loading of athletes and extreme athletes. I'm not as familiar with that space. You are.
Yeah, for sure. It's the mantra is always a carb loading or high carb, you know, your pasta, your rice before you're going out training, before a competition. And, you know, Ivor, this was one of the first things that you said to me when we first met was like, you know, with your high carb diet, cycling and doing high interval work, you were basically treating your body like a Formula One engine. High revs, high octane fuel, something was going to break. And this leads very much into, you know, what Professor Tim Noakes is saying there, right?
Yeah, for sure. And in the Q&A, we got into much more kind of for the ordinary layperson. But I think the important thing is this talk was a seminal talk and so important on the liver and glucose utilization. And what it said about even extreme athletes not benefiting and deleterious effects from carb loading, it even much more applies to ordinary people who aren't even burning all of this huge amount of fuel. So great talk. I'll show a short clip here where he touches on some of the core and then we'll circle back.
However, and this is the paradox and the problem for humans during exercise, is that blood glucose oxidation rises inexorably during prolonged exercise, regardless of whether carbohydrate is ingested or infused during exercise, or whether the exercise begins in the carbohydrate-loaded or depleted state. Hence, during exercise, blood glucose oxidation is regulated differently than is whole body, mainly muscle carbohydrate oxidation. And the point is that blood glucose oxidation just continues to rise, whereas whole body carbohydrate oxidation falls during exercise. And my explanation for this abnormality or apparent abnormality or certainly a paradox is that there's an obligatory blood glucose oxidation to maintain cerebral brain functioning during exercise, as is the well-established case at rest. Therefore, there does appear to be an obligatory need for blood glucose oxidation rather than for muscle glycogen oxidation during exercise. So we began the lecture by saying that perhaps there's no obligatory need for carbohydrates. Well, there is, in fact, during exercise, the brain needs glucose, and it's clear that the need for glucose seems to increase during prolonged exercise. And most of that may well be supplying brain function.
Wow, that was amazing, actually. And it was so interesting to hear that, you know, even for high performance athletes, this whole kind of carb loading thing is almost a myth. And that I know it's very, very clear in, you know, high performance cycle races, you know, stage races, that they always like to take their high carb gel just as they're approaching the last 10, 15, 20 kilometers. And what Tim Noakes is saying, that's actually more for the brain potentially than it is for the muscle fat or the muscle fuel. Great. And just to follow up there, Ivor, for those who are in the UK and maybe familiar with a magazine called Cycling Weekly, which is like the go-to magazine for cyclists in the UK, we're doing an interview or an article about my story, which is coming out very soon, where the guy was really shocked when he was like, Mark, are you trying to say that, you know, we should miss out on our cake and our coffee and our pasta and our rice for, you know, typical cyclists? I'm saying, well, it's your choice, but it's more of a mind thing than it is necessarily a physiological thing. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to think of a cost benefit of any intervention. And as far as they're concerned, it's all benefit. It's all great. And they don't realize long-term costs of diabetes and chronic disease. So absolutely.
Well,
so
fantastic. I'm a bit of a poster boy for that, Ivor, to be honest. You know what I mean? It's like that's been my mantra for the last 25, 30 years. And now, since I've, you know, reduced the exercise, gone low carb, I feel a whole lot happier.
Absolutely. And your blood work reflects it as well, as we've talked about with the Pioneer groups and the other members of We Love Our Heart. So next one, because we got to go with a good clip because we got so much great content, Kendrick. Malcolm Kendrick, good friend, he's going to be visiting me in Ireland shortly, gave an amazing talk, and he basically laid to waste the whole cholesterol kind of myths, while acknowledging real relevance of cholesterol. And he also goes through the real root causes and exactly how heart disease really progresses. Endothelium, you know, inner lining of the artery, inflammatory forces, yada. It was a brilliant talk, wasn't it?
Absolutely, I love it. And I love some of his analogies, and I love his book. It's an absolute must read for anybody who's interested in heart health. And show the clip, Ivor, because there's a couple of things I want to mention afterwards.
Absolutely. And this is a clip towards the end where he's summing up in his inimitable fashion, but it's just a lovely flow, and it illustrates how great the talk was. So here we go.
And if you can repair the endothelial layer, as shown in a nice picture here, all is well. So you need to make sure there's a balance going on. Now, as regard to the glycocalyx, why you may not have heard much about this, just as I was writing this, it was written to you by a chap in Sweden. We said, during the last 4 years, I've studied glycocalyx. During the last year, my first four papers were published in the Swedish journal Medicinsk Access. They then received an anonymous warning reminding them that they're economically dependent on the advertisements of drug companies. My fifth paper was already in print, so it cannot be stopped. My sixth paper, statins, the most sold drugs in the world, are based on incomplete research, was stopped. The chief editor explained straight out that the journal cannot live on without the incomes from Big Pharma. So that was, in fact, the reason for his decision to stop publishing my papers about glycocalyx, which is why this whole area, which is so critical, which is so absolutely vital, is just not discussed sufficiently. So that's a bit of a rush through. I hope you found it interesting, but just bear in mind, heart disease is, cardiovascular disease is a three-stage process, or three processes that are linked together. Damage to the glycocalyx and endothelium, creation of big, nasty blood clots, and the bigger the nastier, the worse. And then interference with the repair processes of the that are caused by the blood clots that are formed. And all the factors that you find that increase the risk of heart disease, the real causal factors, do one of these three things. It's not complicated. It was first proposed 170 years ago, and it is still correct.
I love his analogy with the broken road, the potholed road, maybe because I know exactly the state of the roads in the UK. But it's true. If you can't repair those potholes quick enough, you're leading for trouble. And what's very interesting, although I was a little disappointed he didn't mention his other little analogy. I'm just looking with his glycocalyx here. He often talked about the glycocalyx being as slippery as the slime on a fish's on a fish skin. And I used to be I used to do a lot of fishing, and I know exactly what that means when you're trying to grab the fish that they're slipping around. And he gave an analogy in his book that it's as slippy as that. So that was pretty cool. And one of the things that he mentions a lot in his book is about, you know, the vitamin C scurvy problem being in being part of the clot issue. And that ties up very much for some of the other speakers who are coming later, who will also talk about or mention that vitamin C is one of the main, or a lack of vitamin C is one of the main problems that could arrive from calcification.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't perceive vitamin C as a magic bullet that you hyperdose and it magically does everything. But if you're in any way low, it is, of course, crucial to make sure you're replete. So absolutely. And who we got next? Oh, I've got a trio here. So around 3 minutes, a minute each, of Dr. Collins, Dr. Basington, and pharmacist Graham Phillips. And these clips just show a little insight into their longer version talks. And they're all around managing glucose, resolving, reversing chronic disease with their patients, insulin measuring. You know, we got the world's first kind of easy insulin measure that Dr. Collins is using. And so these clips, you know, they're only clips, but they're going to give you a flavor of the value that these guys brought to the conference. And the Q&As after were superb as well. So here we go.
But Matt also told me an interesting thing was that he wore CGMs. And 8 months later, he noted that if he had things he shouldn't do, his sugars would rise, but then very quickly come back down to a normal level. So we all thought this was quite interesting. We asked him, would he be interested in coming back to get a repeat graph curve to see what was happening in his pancreatic function. And here is his repeat curve, which you can see is glucose, the gold line, now only goes up to 20. Previously, it went up to nearly 30, but this time the insulin response went up to 90 and stayed high for some time. So this was amazing. And again, what you see at the end is insulin and glucose come down to near normal levels. So this was quite dramatic and unexpected. And for all of us here, this is a real story of hope. We all have metabolic illness. And this is proof that we can turn our metabolic illness around and get into really good health.
The Body Mapping Clinic, we use the DNA PhenoAge in clinical practice with bloodsmart.ai software developed by Christopher Kelly at Nourish Balance Thrive. And this is a screenshot of the software's dashboard. This is the dashboard of a 70-year-old female client who, as you can see, has a PhenoAge of 53.4 compared to her chronological age of 70. In the following slide, we can see that her PhenoAge was actually 50.8 7 months previously. So there's been a 2.6 year increase in PhenoAge over the 7 month time interval. Now, with a 20 year difference in chronological and biological age, we don't need to worry too much if we see these small fluctuations.
And here's the typical example, Mariola, who is actually a specialist diabetic nurse. And at the start, she was having quite a few highs. And as we brought down her carbs, she then tended to have a few hypos because her insulin, remember, was still raised. But she persevered and she gave up drinking the liter of fruit juice she'd always drunk, thinking it was one of her five a day. And within a few weeks, her waist came down, her blood pressure came down, everything normalized, and we got her into the green zone. So what is it that we focus upon? It's not just HbA1c, which, just like many other of these tests, on their own can be confusing and not tell you very much. We look at time in range and we look at the level of control. So we want to see over time, because you can have a normal HbA1c as a result of lots of highs and lots of lows, unhealthy, or you can have a nice steady blood glucose and a nice steady result, same HbA1c, but nice tight control. So we're looking for time in range, no excursions, and that is the circumstances in which your insulin will come down and allow everything to progress as it should.
Whoa, there you are. the best of the best, right? Pretty much from the UK, though Dr. Collins is operating out of Ireland as well and doing huge good things for his patients. So what do you reckon, Mark? These guys were great.
And Donal Collins has been so great. Also with the Pioneer Group, we've gone through his metabolic, the insulin testing kit together. We've used it because it's, I mean, Ivor, I don't need to tell you, it's finally a way to get the craft test done without all the problems of finding a doctor and, you know, who's got the patience to even do it and check your insulin and this, that, and the other. So we've worked together with Donal. We've managed to spread his the metabolic machine around the globe at the moment. It's in ones in China and the other ones in the UK, and we got a couple more coming. And that's been brilliant. Working with him has been great. And also Graham the same. He's an absolute wealth of information and how he reads the CGM. And again, with the Pioneer Group, we've all been about, you know, take your CGM, get the data, put the food diary together. Let's see where you are. Let's see where, you know, where's the fine tuning. And he talks very much about his keeping you in the zone, you know, keeping it sort of flatlined, if I'm allowed to use that expression, but you're keeping it flatlined in your, you know, your blood sugar. Brilliant. And I love with Baslington, he talks about this PhenoAge. And I, funnily enough, Ivor, I had my PhenoAge tested and I'm 59 now. I had it tested when I was like 57. I came out at like 39 or something, which was really funny. So the arteries are really supple and that's not nowhere near the issue. But I know it was a bit of an issue for us in the family because my darling wife, who's quite a fair bit younger than me, actually came out with a PhenoAge older than I am. So
the battle of the sexes. Yeah, I might do that at some stage. There's various tools like that which give a pretty good indication of your chronological versus your actual kind of health age. So great stuff, absolutely. So I'm going to keep it moving on now, and we're going to go to the adipocyte Jedi, the master of metabolism, and that's Gábor Erdősi, my good friend from Hungary. So he was the only non-medical doctor, non-professor actually in the whole conference, I think, from memory. And but he's brilliant. His research over the last 5-10 years is just incredible. I'm in awe of him. And I asked him to talk about the immune system, and there is no better person in Europe to talk. And here's a clip from the Q&A session afterwards, where the VIP members had a Q&A directly, and he batted every question, even though they were off topic sometimes, batted them out of the park, as I knew he would. So here he is on visceral obesity.
He was very impressive, Ivor, I have to say. I'm not so familiar with him, but he was very impressive.
Ah, he's incredible. So this is a question he replied to around visceral obesity and how it actually functions or what part it plays. And you can just see the aplomb with which he just answers it. So here we go.
Yeah, I think in general, of course, every organ in the body is there to protect you. So how we should see visceral obesity is that there is a problem, and the body reacts to the problem, and then the organ, which is kind of overused, overstimulated, grows. I think this is also what happens in connection with visceral obesity. So there is ongoing strong environmental impact, and then the body tries to compensate, tries to deal with this problem. So that's why the visceral fat expands. And it's not the volume itself which makes it detrimental, but it's declining function or failure of dealing with the damage coming from the gut. So I think, yeah, it's similar in a way. It's similar to BMI. We see a population-based general association with increasing BMI, and then cardiovascular and diabetes and other problems. But it's not the fat which deposits is the root problem, but when it starts losing its function. And I think in one of the reviews I included in my presentation, there is another graph which shows the relationship between BMI and waist circumference. And there is an almost linear relationship, but the whiskers are really large. So there is an overlap, if I remember correctly, there's an overlap between BMI 28 and BMI 38. So some people at BMI 28 can have the same amount of visceral fat as other people at BMI 38.
Ah, there you go, Gábor. Yeah, Adipocyte Jedi is one name I think I mentioned already they gave him. But immune system, all metabolic processes, everything around adipose tissue, the hormonal balances, the gut hormones. I mean, and of course, in his talk, he went through how it all goes back largely to the gut axis and the gut-brain axis, that all these bad things we know about, they kind of operate their badness for your health and for a future heart attack through gut mechanisms. So fascinating talk.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I'm doing a lot of work with my microbiomes at the moment with Tim Noakes's yogurt and Dr. Davis's yogurt, and having great results. Actually, it's really helping. And one of the things that Gabor said that really interested me too was this crossover with the BMI. 28 to 38 is about the same, and it's interesting because you probably know as well, the BMI is not such an accurate measure actually, and especially for small muscular people, they tend to come out with a well over the top BMI, even though they're just like power packets. Like track sprinters, for example, I know have really big BMIs, although they're extremely fit guys.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think Agatston in our next clip will touch on that. But for sure, I mean, insulin-sensitive obesity is the title of a scientific paper that is Gabor's favorite of all time, and mine too. So we spent 6 months going through adipose tissue kind of technology in chronic disease. And then I gave my big talk in Miami to the Doctors for Ancestral Health, and he was a huge help. But that paper, I think I'll attach that down below. It's stunning, and it speaks to that. It's not the BMI, it's the visceral versus subcutaneous fat ratios and the leptin, adiponectin, and the amount of macrophage from your immune system in your visceral fat cells. They're the real measures. But finally, just a quick one to close it, it's the waist height ratio that's the real measure, and it should be around 0.5. Your waist circumference, half your height. That's a vastly better measure, and it's so easy to do. But people don't like doing it because most of the West ain't going to pass that measure anymore.
It's really interesting as well, Ivor, as well. You're going to go to Agatston. And, you know, I also did this with Graham when I was working with him. Also, this whole kind of thin on the outside, fat on the inside. And to quote Graham as well, to be thin is not a guarantee of good health either, actually. And I think Agatston also talks about the different body sizes and what can happen. Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as we know, lipodystrophy patients who can't make subcutaneous fat, so they looked ripped and muscular. They look incredible. They look really skinny, but they're almost all type 2 diabetic because they have no subcutaneous fat as a storage form to manage their glucose insulin balance. So that's an extreme case in point. So Agatston, we talked about, well, here he is, the master himself. And people who are not aware, the coronary calcium scan, the most important measure of your arterial health, the Agatston score was developed, the algorithm, by my buddy, Dr. Agatston, around 40 years ago. And since then, he's one of the world's top cardiologists. He's been scanning and serially scanning patients, some of whom he's still scanning. He first scanned 35 plus years ago. And he eliminates heart attacks by watching the development of the disease with the coronary artery calcium scan and then appropriately giving the low carb or keto interventions, lifestyle, and also medications if he feels someone is genetically predisposed and lifestyle interventions not quite enough. So here's a clip with the great Dr. Agatston from our conference, We Love Our Heart.
And they have, it turns out, long risk factor exposure, in a sense, their lipodystrophy equivalents. So here's the example of somebody I followed for over 20 plus years in our practice, now 71, very high calcium score, peak A1C of 6.4, but less during most of the time we followed him, mainly in the fives. And it was hard to take his lifestyle problems very seriously before we measured Kraft testing, because he had minimal subcutaneous fat. He looked ripped, frankly, but he did have visceral fat and he had liver fat as well. And like the lipodystrophy, he had exposure to insulin resistance and beta cell dysfunction from a very early age. When we weren't doing Kraft testing, we didn't know it. And this heavy calcification shows that he had calcification over many, many years, long risk factor exposure. Well, in fact, when he lost weight, his insulin levels came down, but he had persistent beta cell dysfunction.
Wow, that was so interesting, and all the different body sizes and how that can affect. But what, you know, what was also great, Ivor, was we had Dr. Scott Murray in there from Venturi as co-host, as guest, and he was there because he wanted to meet Dr. Agathston. He was like, because yep. That's what they do. The Venturi Clinic, you know, they're all about CT, CAC scans and all of that stuff. And Dr. Scott Murray, as you know, is one of the smartest guys around. And he really helped us out on the day as well. You remember?
It was super. And yeah, Dr. Murray, I go back with Scott many, many years. And he was in our movie Extra Time, all around cardiac scanning and with Irish elite athletes. Great guy, great sense of humor, and he's a research cardiologist. So the difference with Scott, and I was explaining to Dr. Agathston, he has published papers in deep IVUS or intravenous ultrasound and qualifying actual plaque and doing mathematical models for the stability of plaque depending on its morphology. So Scott has all of that research cardiology on top of a long-term practice. So he's an amazing guy. And like you said, he stepped in when, unfortunately, Dr. William Davis and his gut talk, he couldn't make it because we had mixed up times a little. We're going to be going back and getting him and recording that. But Scott stepped in, and we have a whole Q&A recorded as well for We Love Our Heart with Scott. Informal cardiac Q&A. So I don't have a clip. Perfect.
No, stuff. But really interesting stuff on off the hip. And it's great as well, because with the Pioneer Group as well, as you know, Ivor, we also work together with Venturi, and because they offer online consultations. So it's something that people can do from around the world. And it's something that is part of the Pioneer program. So, and the feedback has been great as well. We love those guys.
Yeah, excellent. I've really enjoyed being in those sessions, and they're so positive, even though many of them have had heart attacks and other major issues. But it's all about moving forward, understanding the science and preventing future problems. So fantastic, guys. We'll switch now from Agathston and go to Johnny Bowden, PhD. And he's been an absolute hero over the last 10 or 15 years on debunking the cholesterol myths. I mean, cholesterol does have a place, and this clip I'm going to show is a good one, because he's saying, truthfully, we didn't say it's all bunkum. We didn't say the statins are completely nonsense, you know, and he explains the advanced lipoprotein tests and how cholesterol has a place, but you got to use the right tests. So here's the clip.
And the great thing about Johnny, Ivor, is he explains it very simply so that everybody can understand it all the way through. Yeah, great guy.
Absolutely. Great guy. Great, great pal. So here we go. Here's Johnny.
We have been attacked, Dr. Sinatra and I, for being anti-statin and anti-cholesterol testing. And that is because then, as now, we are extremely tribalized. There is no room for a nuanced position. There's no room for a center position. You're either pro-vax or anti-vax. You're either pro-cholesterol, anti-cholesterol. We're not really anti-statin at all. We are anti-over-marketing of statin drugs. Looking at good and bad cholesterol was great in 1963. We now know there's 13 different subtypes of cholesterol. They behave differently. This is the test you need to get. All of the labs offer some version of this test. Okay, so the take-home points for today. Cholesterol, as we know it, LDL cholesterol certainly doesn't cause heart disease. Saturated fat does not clog your arteries. There is something far more insidious than cholesterol ever was that we should be looking at and aren't. Hint, insulin resistance. We'll talk about that in a minute. And three, we're not paying attention to the intangibles and unmeasurables. John Yudkin, and he thought that actually sugar tracked with heart disease a lot better than fat did, and that maybe we should be looking at sugar. And Ansel Keys was the kind of guy, he did not take to questioning or criticisms easy. Ansel Keys was the kind of guy who would say things like, if you disagree with me, you disagree with the science.
And wow, that was great, Ivor. And you know what the great thing was? That you didn't believe it either. The guy is 75 years old. He's as fit as a fiddle. He's playing 2 hours tennis a day. He's walking his dog. And that's what he meant, I think, when he was talking about the unmeasurables as well. Let's not forget, it's not just about, you know, the blood data, the CGMs. It's also about, you know, just the stress management, you know, enjoying yourself, living to enjoy your life and being happy. That's one of the big things. And Johnny's a great spokesperson for that.
Absolutely. And again, that all links back to the science too. It sounds a little bit more woo perhaps, but the reality is keeping your cortisol down, when you reduce chronic stress, your insulin goes down, glucose shifts down. So all of the metabolic parameters shift according to how you're living your life and psychologically. So it's really, and sleep, of course, really important too, quality sleep. Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. Levy then, a very stern and highly accomplished cardiac surgeon, I think.
Yeah.
He's spent a
also
long
a lawyer,
time.
By the way. He's also a lawyer.
Also a lawyer. Yeah, he's a heavy-hitting guy. First time I met him, and he doesn't suffer fools gladly. He's a pretty serious dude, but he gave a really powerful talk, unsurprisingly. And he's focusing on periodontal health and this whole thing about root canal and infections being a primary driver of the processes that lead to atherosclerosis. And one of the things we don't talk about as much and could explain many people who appear to have good metabolic parameters, reasonably good history, and yet they come up with high scores. So this clip, he touches on quite a few of the items in his talk. It's really good.
Wow, Ivor, let me say, first of all, thanks to Jackie Simley, who was one of our pioneers. She brought him to the group because she had followed, he was one of her guys that she followed. She brought him to the pioneer group, which he's been really keen to take part in. And he showed us these presentations, these talks. And honestly, Ivor, the first time I saw this presentation, I couldn't talk for 2 hours afterwards. I was so like, oh my God, no one's ever mentioned this even either. And he's really very straight on what he, you know, his point. And, you know, he really hits on the whole teeth thing. So, well, let's just play it and I'll come back after.
Yeah, and I'll say a few words after as well. Yeah, absolutely. Because this was relatively new to me. I was aware of it, but he was new to me. And the clarity and proof of what he gave in his talk was quite striking to me as a seriously scientific person. It wasn't vague or hinting. So here's a piece, guys.
And what are the prominent promoters of all chronic degenerative diseases? Well, as I pretty much indicated, number one on the list is infections. And of the infections, number one on the list is dental origin. Now, focal infection, like I said, that's an infected tooth, gums, tonsils, and they're present in sinuses, upper respiratory tract. Those are the oral pathogen colonizations. And then I mentioned in that last, the number three, you see different areas you can get infections, but they're just statistically so unimportant when you're dealing with trying to figure out what's going on in a given person with some chronic degenerative disease. You need to understand inflammation. All inflammation basically means a high prooxidant or toxic presence, which also means an area that is inflamed has completely lost all of its vitamin C, because vitamin C is the primary antioxidant that exists to help neutralize new toxins. And as Dr. Huggins told me many years ago, look, you can't dry off while you're still in the shower. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's amazing with his simple stuff like the H2O2, the water pick, the hydrogen peroxide. This has become part of my daily routine now, Ivor, you know, with the water pick and nebulizing with H2O2, and which has got other various benefits as well, but I don't need to go there. And he's been a really strong mover behind the pioneer group and helping us all, and that's fantastic. And also he links up very strong with magnesium and vitamin C being very important too, so he's on top of it all. Great guy.
It's all a synergy. So the top guys, and we gathered some of the best across the world without question in the conference, but the top guys all largely resonate with each other. They have particular favorites that they think are more dominantly important, but if you put them all together, it's all one clear, multifaceted message. And that's what I love. And that's what I've seen the last 10 years of my research, picking out the best guys. But the dental one, I'll just say one final word on that. I wasn't aware that every single root filling or these kinds of things, every single one, when you look, you find bacteria down there with no exceptions. Because I presumed a lot of them are problematic, but that was interesting to be that emphatic. Every single one has deep infections when you look, but the industry doesn't really want to look because there isn't really a drug for it, so not interested.
Not only there isn't a drug for it either, but the dentists make a lot of money after doing the root canal work. No disrespect to any dentist.
No.
But this, you know, this is, I say this is the one thing that kind of shocked me when I first heard this, because I've got 5 root canals either.
Yeah.
And I have been found a biodentist and done the 3D cone x-ray and all those things that Dr. Levy said. And it's exactly like he said, and exactly like you just said, at the foot of every root canal, he can see inflammation. And we are negotiating at the moment to have them pulled out. No other way for it. Yeah.
It's rough. And yeah, I have basically one, potentially 2 more due to bruxism. Unfortunately, a modern problem as well, grinding, major molar. But my dentist, he didn't want to get into the topic of there being a problem with root canal. I could tell it was political and it was hot, but he basically said, Ivor, it's more expensive, but I'm telling you, go for the titanium implant and never look back. And that's what I got. So, you know, there's problems with many kinds of dental work, but the root canal seems to be particularly problematic. So one to watch. We're going to finish with Mike Eads, my good pal. And in fact, just a quick anecdote. When I first went out with the metabolic syndrome on YouTube, poor quality video and audio, got a lot of attention back in 2012. But it was 2013, I think, when I went out with the cholesterol conundrum. And that was a huge body of work. And I decoded cholesterol for the layperson and scientists alike, and it was hugely popular. But a couple of days after that, I got an email from a guy, Dr. Mike Eads, and I told a work colleague, and I said, who's this guy, Protein Power? Because I didn't know anything about low carb, or I wasn't focused. I did my own research. And the guy goes, who I was talking to, Dr. Mike Eads. Oh my God, he's like 4 million sales, Protein Power. He's unbelievable. Oh, so I wrote to him. Lovely man, incredibly erudite. One of the most intelligent men I know, or women I know. And he's just out of this world, I think. But he gave a lovely talk for us in our conference, We Love Our Heart. And it was this paleo, the actual history and the science of what we were designed to eat as humans. And it's a beautiful talk. But the clip I'm going to show is the extra thing I asked him to add in. I wanted him to put in his insights on calcification progression and density and volume. And how you can get much more information out of your calcium score when you ask them for the density, the volume, the slice thickness. And I'll just show a clip of that sequence to give you a taster. So here we are.
So that should give the lie to this whole thing that cholesterol makes any difference in heart disease, because these people had a lot of atherosclerosis, but no heart disease. And so how can we reconcile that? Well, we can look at coronary artery calcium scoring. And coronary artery calcium scoring, you actually see the plaque in the scans that are run of the heart. And the plaque shows up as calcium because plaque contains about 20% calcium. And I'm going to talk about a way of calcium scoring that is a little bit controversial, but I think a much more valid way to do it. The old way to do calcium scoring, or the way that most people actually do it, is they look at the area of the calcium. And here's a slice that CT machine takes at the heart, and they multiply it by a density factor to come up with the Gadsden score. And they can get a volume score too by multiplying the same thing, the area of the density in a slice times the thickness of the slice, that gives a volume score. And so there's a different way to do the scoring, which is called a density score, which we'll look at in a second.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm a massive fan of human anthropology and, you know, where we, you know, how we evolved and where we came from. So the first part was really interesting. The calcification stuff too, fascinating. And again, just to mention, with the Pioneer Group, we've had a lot of people who come to us with a worrying CAC score, inverted commas, you know, a high CAC score. And there's not a lot of help out there. to say, what do you do now? You know, you're given a score, yes, but what happens next? Dr. Ralph also says this right at the very beginning. And so it's, we've got a little more ammunition now to help people who come to us and say, oh, I've got a calcium score, 3,000, 4,000, whatever. That's all there. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. Again, Pioneer Groups are really helping there.
Oh, yeah, it's been excellent. It's great to talk to people with super high scores and reassure them. Again, not medical advice, but go through the science and how high scores do in general predict a very poor risk profile in the future. There are exceptions based on density and volume. There are exceptions based on progression and whether you're progressing. So there's all this reassuring science you can explain to people. And of course, the crucial thing, all of the things we know from the science that slow progression or stop it, we have such an array of them. And then people who are interested can actually tackle their own health, which is the most important thing of all. So it's great. Any other comment then on Mike and progression? Well, yeah, I guess the study in the Q&A, we had a great Q&A and we teased that out. And again, all of this material will be available later. We'll talk about that. But the Raji study I featured in the Q&A and shared it on the screen. And it just showed how dramatically, if you slow your progression, even at a 2000 score or a 500 score, doesn't matter. You slow the annual progression and your risk collapses down to someone who has a low score and low disease. And this is the hope that was shown in our Extra Time movie too. So yeah, it's super stuff. So maybe we'll wrap up again. We want to keep this tight, you know, attention spans these days. But just talk around our whole We Love Our Heart infrastructure and everything we're doing and working on for years.
The great thing about this conference was that it was actually also sort of a launch pad for our Trailblazers membership that we want to set up as well, which is where we want to form a community where people can come, ask questions, talk to our experts, no medical advice, individual medical advice, obviously, but just share experience, share good experience, share bad experience. What have they tried? Has this worked? What doesn't work? Supplements, how to take, what to take, when to take, all those kind of issues, but to really create a crowd, a community basically around, you know, heart disease. I don't like to use that word, heart health and longevity. And we're going to be including a lot of the guys, the people we've talked to today, yourself as well, obviously, is like the guiding lights for the whole thing. And and not to forget, of course, the recordings will be available as soon as this video is out. People can buy the whole set of recordings with all the Q&As and all of the talks that we've talked about. So the future's bright. Wow. I so hope so.
Absolutely. It's funny, when you came to me, I don't know, a couple of years ago with this concept after your experience of near death to create this whole tribe and this online primarily community. And I thought it was a fantastic idea because there was nothing like it. I mean, we've got all the conferences and we got all the various groups, but I thought that's a great idea. But then again, I'm busy. We're all busy. But it's interesting now, after 2 years of kind of effort and all the pioneer groups and now the conference, how it's all just coming to fruition. So I think it's going to be a huge asset for people going forward. Create that community around what you described. So, yeah, I guess that's it then, pretty much. By the time this podcast comes out, as Mark said there, we'll have the links to the We Love Our Heart general kind of information page and the We Love Our Heart /live, which goes to the recordings of the fantastic conference, all the Q&As. We're going to add in as well Dr. Scott Murray, that informal Q&A. It's quite amusing and insightful. And we'll have the links as well to the membership club. And indeed, if you want to get on the Pioneer, the next Pioneer group, which deep dives more intensely on people's experience and the science. And I don't know. I'm rambling now, Mark. But
No, it's brilliant, Ivor. Exactly that. We want people. It's really, We Love Our Heart is like a patient-led group. We're curious people who don't just want to be talked down to by our doctors, but be able to talk to people eye to eye because we've learned or we've got a bit of knowledge to be able to engage in a conversation and not just be like, oh, yes, of course, yes, I'll take that and I'll do that and I'll...
That's it. And, you know, in the spirit of Fat Emperor, it's patient-led, not pharma-led or corporate-led, so... You know, it fits with me perfectly, this whole endeavor. So fantastic stuff, Mark. We're going to be back again. We're going to be talking again. I might put a couple of links down below to our earlier podcasts. We did one with a super high calcium score from the Pioneer Group and a couple more. I might stick those links down below as the taster and whatever other links we discussed. So great stuff. Fantastic. Mark, have a great one.
You too, Ivor. Take care.